Are your ulcerative colitis symptoms proving difficult to manage? Tremfya, guselkumab, can help you manage the cycle of UC symptoms. At 1 year, many patients taking Tremfya achieved clinical remission, and some patients also achieved endoscopic remission. Individual results may vary. Tremfya is a prescription medicine used to treat adults with moderately to severely active ulcerative colitis. Serious allergic reactions and increased risk of infections may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and TB. Tell your doctor if you have an infection, flu-like symptoms, or if you need a vaccine. Ask your doctor if Tremfya can help you manage the cycle of UC symptoms. Call 1-800-526-7736 to learn more or visit TremfyaRadio.com.
What a play! Thanks for having us over for game day. This sure is quite the spread. I'd hate to be on dish duty tonight.
With my game plan, those dishes don't stand a chance against my secret weapon. Finish Ultimate.
Finish Ultimate?
You bet. I've been practicing all year. And with the help of Finish, I know I can be the ultimate game day host. All right, hands in. Finish on three.
Finish!
Tackle big messes and impress your guests with Finish Ultimate.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With Nissan.
On News Talk.
So we're going to start off today's show by asking, how equipped is Ireland to deal with the rise in demand for electric cars? According to figures from the Society of the Motor Industry Ireland, electric vehicle use continues to grow. There is an 80% year-on-year increase in the market share, as it now stands at 13% of all cars. But the question is Irish infrastructure equipped to deal with the increase that we expect and anticipate in electrical vehicle use? And so I'm joined today by Paddy Coleman, who is the Director of Communications with AA Ireland. You're very welcome, Paddy. With Emma Mitchell, the Operations Director of the Society of the Irish Motor Industry, SIMI, and our Lunchtime Live presenter, Andrea Gilligan. So you're all very, very welcome this afternoon, and thanks for joining me on this nerve-wracking session today. So we can see that there is an absolutely massive demand, albeit that we're still only at 13%, Paddy, but the vast majority of people that are buying new cars as registered this year are starting to change their practices. The question is Ireland ready for that anticipated rise in demand? So what's your reaction, Paddy, to the upswing for the amount of vehicles that are being bought in Ireland today? And do you put that down to anything in particular? Is it because people are climate conscious? Is it because the grants that are there? What do you think?
Well, look, it's a combination of all of those factors. There is a real mental shift towards EVs. And I think the figures that we see don't really tell the whole story. I know Emma will touch on it later on, but the figures that we see now the sales for the year are down. However, EV sales are up 80%. But from talking to lots of manufacturers today, they're saying that if they had the supply, that these figures would be much, much higher, that there would be in some cases 15, 20%. They'd be selling 15 to 20% more EVs if they had them. So supply is a huge issue. And, you know, there's several reasons for that. The global shortage of chips. And obviously the chips at the time went into laptops because people were all working from home. But that is a factor. So whilst on the surface it looks like, you know, overall the figures are down, people want them and people would take them if they had them. We just don't have them at the moment.
So the delay that's been caused is because of infrastructure and procurement issues. Mm. But does it give us the breathing space to actually anticipate that our infrastructure isn't probably as sufficient enough in Ireland as we would expect? Talk to us about the infrastructure and what you would expect and anticipate to see the state's reaction to it.
I'm looking at this for a number of years now. I think we probably overshot the runway initially by having lots of charging points at a time when we didn't have vehicles. So the ESB e-cars started off and there was lots of charging points put out, but there were no cars and there was no appetite for the cars at the time. We're at a funny point now. We're at a point where there's probably enough charging points for the vehicles that we have. But as we said earlier on, these will increase dramatically and there would be more if we had them. But as we know, the majority of people need to think about charging at home. That is going to be 80% of charging should take place at home. Now, obviously, there's issues there if you're in an apartment block or if you're somewhere like that. But really, we're at the point now where things are OK, But we need to keep an eye on it because those numbers of EVs are going to increase and maybe we're not ready for that growth.
So Emma, let me ask you then, if what Paddy says is that 80% of the charging should be happening at home, I don't see in my neighbourhood, you know, all of my neighbours rushing out to get electric chargers put on the side of their house. So what needs to happen, and can you describe for our listeners the four different types of charging that should be available and how you anticipate people using them?
Yeah, I suppose as was what Paddy said, you know, 80% of charging is done at home. And I think, you know, people who have houses and driveways are obviously ideally suited. And, you know, we really welcomed Minister Ryan's announcement last week that they're going to extend the home charging grant now. So you don't actually even have to have an EV. So you can now apply for this grant for future proofing your home. And also they're going to extend the grant to apply for apartments as well. So that'll be great for landlords and people that are in apartment infrastructure. So I suppose the department are really looking at this, and they do appreciate that it's critical that we do need to look at the infrastructure. And I suppose really what's key is, and you know, certainly from my experience as an EV driver, I have my car since March and I've only used a public charge point once since then, and all my charging has been done at home. But that's the type of driving that I do. I'm taking the car to Ackle in a few weeks, so hopefully
you might need to stop a few weeks. And can I ask, I've been nosy now, have you looked at your route? Have you decided where your spot, like I know there's apps available to map out where you can stop so that you make sure that you don't run shy of electricity?
Yeah, I've looked at it a few times and my car should get me there. But, you know, obviously you want to keep it as fully charged as possible. So, you know, I think what we really need is fast charging. And I know you touched on this in your programme yesterday. It's really reliable fast charging. So when you get to that charger, it's working and it's available.
And is that, correct me if I'm wrong, is that what we call destination charging? And is that the responsibility of the state, or are there private providers that would be installing them along our routes and around the country?
I think it's a bit of both. You know, obviously it's really important that the infrastructure stays ahead of demand. But I think, you know, if there's a commercial opportunity, certainly you will see chargers in places where there's a commercial return. But I think perhaps, you know, say for example along the Wild Atlantic Way, I think it's important that there's chargers put there, and they may perhaps need to be subsidised because they may not be as, you know, as commercially suitable.
They'll only be seasonal.
Okay. Exactly.
Andrea, can I come to you and ask you, you've recently done a programme because you did a journey in your electronic car and you took the bull by the horns, as they say, and went out at the mercy of what infrastructure is there. How did your journey go?
I've had two. Well, I was test driving cars, basically, not to buy them, but for this very experience to see what the public network system is like. And I've had two different BMW iCars, the i4 and the iX, within the past 3 weeks, just for a couple of days to get a sense of what the system's like. And the first time I went to Waterford, and that's brilliant, 2 hours down the road, you know, you can stop at Kilcullen, the big petrol station there, all fantastic, loads of charging points. I've been to Sligo, and then this weekend I went to Donegal. And I don't want it to be a sort of once you go on, you go beyond the M50 or you get outside of Dublin. But there is a difference, and that's just a fact. Now, that's probably a very warranted fact, because I'm assuming that a number of years ago when the electric charging points were put in place, probably the vast majority of EV purchasers initially were probably in the Dublin, you know, commuter belt area. So maybe that is part and parcel of the reason, I don't know. But two things I would say from my experience over the course of the three weeks. The cars that I've had they're miles ahead, Regina, of the public network system. Like the cars that I've used, they're about 377 kilometres. That's the real range of the last vehicle I had, the i4. The previous one was about 470. So this is going to get me to Donegal. Yeah, but I deliberately took Geraldine Herbert's advice one day here on Lunchtime Live about it, and I altered my driving. I did the aircon. I did the wireless charging. I changed how I drove to see the impact on the range. And the reality is, I'm going to have to stop at some point when I'm driving to Donegal and return journey back to stop to charge. But like, in my opinion, over the course of 3 weeks, we have a plethora of ESB public charging points around the country. We've loads of them. The question always is, we don't have enough. In actual fact, I think we have. What we should do is rip out the old ones that are there. I'm only interested in using high powered, because the example of using the slow charge, Regina, I went down on Monday I was so delighted to hear, actually. I stopped in Ballinalack on Sunday to charge the car in Westmeath, and I was just chatting to a woman there, and she said, do you know they've got two high power charging stations just outside of Donegal town in what would be, say, my local station close to my home house in Donegal, 10 minutes up the road. I said, two of them. Like, I haven't seen two of them anywhere, not in Waterford, not in Sligo, nowhere. Delighted to hear this. Landed up there on Monday. The two of them were offline. Like, why on earth would two of the ESB charging point stations be offline? That meant I drove on to Donegal Town, used the one down at the Diamond, and like I stopped for 40 minutes, the escapade of charging the car for 40 minutes, I got 6%. Like, who is going to wait on a bank holiday Monday for, like, for 40 minutes at 6%? So my take on this is rip out what's there. Only interested in dealing in fast or high power chargers.
So actually, I think I agree with you. So insofar as that everybody's mindset is that we do need to change our practices and obviously how we drive and what kind of cars we drive, people still are, you know, very precious with regard to their time and sitting around the side of the road.
I am precious. Yeah. And
I don't mean, but you know what I mean.
No, and I'm fierce and patient, but like, I've no, if it's 40 minutes for 6%, how long are we going to be there to get to Dublin?
On your bike. Paddy, can I ask you, Minister Eamon Ryan recently launched a public consultation around the e-charging strategy. It closed at the end of May. We are going to invest €1 billion on trying to reduce our transport emissions down by that 50% magic number that we've all agreed to. What do we need to see in that strategy? Is it, as Andrea said, go back and get rid of the slow chargers and make sure that we have the fast charging up and down the country? Do we need to look at the routes? Is it as simple as that we have them on routes where people have high traffic volume, you know, and that mightn't necessarily be Dublin to Donegal, even though there's a tremendous amount of people travelling? What do you need to see from that strategy?
I think Andrea's right. I mean, with the modern cars, you're literally only scratching the surface by putting it into a slow charger, and you would have had the experience of that's pretty much like putting it into your plug socket at home. So those need to come out, those need to be changed. We do need to improve the fast charging network, but it's also a case that, you know, those networks have to be putting out the right amount of power. There's plenty of ESB fast chargers which say they're putting out or have the capability of putting out 150, but are actually only putting out 50 still because they don't have the right substations in some of the areas. So that needs to be looked at. But there are still areas of the country which are very poorly served. So the likes of Cork in particular is very, very poorly served. And of course, the west of Ireland, where, as Emma touched on earlier on, there might not be a commercial viability in putting those in. So Emma makes an excellent point about the fact that there might need to be subsidies put in place to encourage smaller businesses as well to put them into those areas. Yeah. So look, it's a prudent approach that we need, and I think the public consultation will unearth that.
Emma, can I ask you, do you think the reason the lack of infrastructure in certain places at the moment is because we don't yet have an e-charging strategy and it has been reliant on people like the ESB and other private providers putting them in themselves?
I think there's a very good strategy there. I think, as Paddy said, we were ahead of the game 10, 12 years ago. And I think it's now just a case of updating these. And I think, look, it's just really important that, you know, that the supports remain, the government supports remain, but also, I suppose, that they remain for the purchase incentives, because the two big fears when people are buying a car is range and upfront costs. So I think if both can remain and work in tandem, I think we will certainly see the numbers growing and the infrastructure should Very keep good. In touch.
Just some of our texts from our listeners. Can our grid manage a large proportion of our car fleet going electric?
At the moment, yes is the answer, but there needs to be work done in the future, because as we know from that graph, the volume of those numbers is going to grow dramatically over the next few years. So there needs to be work done there.
Andrea, how much of the 6% that you got charged, how far would you have got?
I wouldn't even, probably about as far as Ballyshannon, Regina, if I'm to be honest with you. But like, just by way of context or comparison, you know, like the 40 minutes on the slow charge at 6%, I pulled into Ballinalact, the high power charge thing there, and like I'd 50, about just over 50% in 30 minutes. Like, that's the difference. It's totally game changing. It makes the whole experience, like, you know, when I plan the route around, I'll go in, I get a coffee, you can go to the toilet, like, there's a great facility there, the car's charging, you know, 30 minutes, you come out, you can head off in your route. And like, that's what makes it completely, you know, an entirely new experience. And like, I know lots and lots of people at the moment that are going out and they want to buy an electric car. And like, the thing is, you're right, 80% of them are going to put the home charger, but like, you will go on a long journey. You're going to go on a staycation. You're going to go and visit somebody. And I just think it needs to be just a little bit easier. But I think Emma's right about the point. Like, it's, you know, subsidise the privatisation of some of this. And I think that is going to be game changing. I had a guy on the show yesterday rang in. I just remember his name was Liam, and he was from Limerick, and he's talking about they're planning to build a new petrol station forecourts effectively in Limerick. And he talked about putting in, wait till you hear this, a 30 berth EV charging thing. So it'd be like the huge, imagine, forecourts roof and cover over the whole lot of it, going to be a covered walkway into the shop, the toilets, the whole lot, but 30 EVs. And I think that's where that's the vision we need for this now, all over the place.
I think on that point, though, a lot of the petrol retailers are going to be very important in that. And, you know, I was talking to one of the larger ones today who plan on doing 12 to 15 per year of the fast charging ones in their own forecourt. So that will also help.
Okay. Some of our texts from our callers. One caller from Waterford says the infrastructure in this country is rubbish. I live in Waterford, own an electric car, and I wouldn't leave my county. And Waterford has one fast charger in the city. It's a joke. Somebody else says, nobody mentions the energy required to make cars, including electric cars, is from fossil fuels, and that won't be changing. Also, disposing of electric batteries is very difficult and terribly expensive and bad for the environment. That was Peter. If you want to contact us this evening, your views are very important to us. Call us on 1800 453 106. Text us on 53106 at a cost of 30 cent. Email the hard shoulder at newstalk.com or tweet the hard shoulder, and we'd be very happy to ask your views. Paddy, can I ask you finally, when we look at the new strategy and the incentives, obviously we need to incentivise people to be putting the infrastructure from a charging perspective where it doesn't exist and mightn't be financially viable. What about the incentives for the cars themselves? There's been mooted kind of discussions that maybe they might be reduced given that people are now naturally buying the cars. What's your view on that?
There's a couple of views on that. One is that obviously they can't do it forever. The government can't possibly provide such generous grants forever. However, we've seen in countries like Denmark where it's been premature that the sales of those cars have fallen off a cliff. So I think there's a balance there. Maybe for the higher end vehicles that can be reduced, but I think there still is a place to have grants on more regular family EVs to help encourage that technology.
Okay. What do you think, Emma?
Yeah, I'd absolutely agree. You know, I think the price of an EV is still higher than the price of your petrol or diesel car. And we want to, you know, there's very ambitious targets in place. And I think we can reach them if the right supports are there. So we would almost say keep them there till 2025. And then after that, then start to look at phasing them out. And certainly that would help people make a decision, you know, when you're looking at a car that's almost like for like price wise.
I think in fairness, when we look at the prices increases of petrol and diesel, if people had the choice, obviously, and the incentives are there, they would obviously move. Mm. But it does involve us having our e-charging strategy right, our pricing strategy right, and obviously all of the infrastructure that we need all around the country to encourage people to do what they want to actually do. And I think recently we've seen the increased price of second-hand cars that are only available in Ireland. So the whole market dynamic is changing shiftly, but I think it's really encouraging that people actually want to make the choices. I think when the initial announcements were made a number of years ago of how many electric cars we would need to see being purchased by 2030, people raised eyebrows and thought, you must be mad. Mm. And now actually you can see the numbers going in the right direction and going well. So, okay, that's very encouraging. Thank you for your views today. We have Paddy Coleman, the Director of Communications of AA Ireland, Emma Mitchell, Operations Director of the Society of the Irish Motor Industry, and our very own Andrea Gilligan. Thank you very much for your views this afternoon.
Thank you. Thank you.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.
What a play. Thanks for having us over for game day. This sure is quite the spread. I'd hate to be on dish duty tonight.
With my game plan, those dishes don't stand a chance against my secret weapon, Finish Ultimate.
Finish Ultimate?
You bet. I've been practicing all year, and with the help of Finish, I know I can be the ultimate game day host. All right, hands in. Finish on 3.
Finish!
Tackle big messes and impress your guests with Finish Ultimate.